This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. As always, I am your host, Shane Told, as I take you into the backstage conversations between myself and other lead singers. And oh boy, today we have a big one. We've had a lot of requests for this gentleman in the past, 87 episodes? I think this is episode 87. So many requests. Very happy to get him to agree to do this. We have Franz of Attila, Chris Franzak, and a controversial guy. I mean, there's no question. If you know anything about Attila, you know they have some questionable content on their records, some of the language, some of the subject matter, and a lot of people hate this band. Myself, I'm on the fence, to be honest, how I feel about it. Clearly, what I'm trying to spread with my music is, you know, messages of hope. And my direction is a lot different than Attila's direction. And talking to him was very interesting, very eye-opening. And say what you want about him, but he's very smart, he's very articulate, and he's very successful. Before we jump into that, big shout out to all my sinners worldwide. My sinners, if you don't know, are what I affectionately call the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club members. And the All Access Club is something that was started back at the end of last year. And basically, it's for the people that listen to this show every week, but one episode is just not enough for them. And they want more content. They want bonus episodes. They want to interact with other members of the show. They want to interact with me. Maybe they want to get things in the mail. Maybe they want Lead Singer Syndrome merch. Whatever it is, joining the club really does help me keep the lights on around here, keep the show going week after week, and it costs as little as $6 a month. So please check out the All Access Club. The link for that is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Another way you can help the show, if you buy anything on Amazon ever, please use the Amazon affiliate link. It is leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. You go to that link, it takes you right to Amazon, the Amazon homepage, you log in like normal, and we actually get 4 to 6%, and it costs you absolutely nothing. So if you have a big ticket purchase, even if it's just something small, just remember to use that link, and a little does go a long way. We have a lot of people that listen to the show, and a lot of people do that, and every couple months when I get the check coming in from Amazon, it's actually pretty decent. So please keep doing that. Again, that does help us keep this show going week after week. I want to give a big thank you to Ryan from Seaway for jumping on last week. We had a great talk. Check it out if you missed it. Want to remind you guys that the Seaway album is coming. It's called Vacation. I actually got an advance copy, and I think it is one of the best pop punk records of this year, maybe of the last who even knows how many years. It's a great record, so be on the lookout for that. Also, I'm on Warped Tour right now. Trophy Eyes is killing it. Knocked Loose is killing it. Those were also some episodes we did the last couple weeks, so also make sure you go back and check those out as well. And, of course, there is a brand new Silverstein record. It's called Dead Reflection. It came out just about a week ago. Thank you so much to everybody that has picked up that record, streamed that record, bought the vinyl, whatever you've done. That's amazing. We had a great first week. And really what's the most exciting is just the feedback we've gotten on this record. People have been so emphatic about how great they think this album is, and everyone's got a different favorite song. And, you know, for me, I've spoken pretty honestly about how I had a pretty rough go, a pretty rough year, and this record really was a piece of my soul to be. I know it sounds overdramatic, but it really was. I really poured my heart out into this one. So please check out the new Silverstein record, even if you just go on Spotify and give it a spin. That helps us out big time. So it's called Dead Reflection, and it is out right now. Anyways, hey, let's get into this week's episode with the always controversial Chris the Franz, Franzak of Attila. 666, party with the devil, bitch. Rachel Hollis, anonymous. Franz is fairly quiet
hello.
A loud man.
Yeah. I got a soft voice. My offstage voice is pretty soft spoken.
No,
Hello.
Yeah, you're fine. That'll be great, man. No, it's that's one thing that strikes me about you. We can start right there. Is like all the dealings I've had with you over the last like whatever I've known you for 3 or 4 years, kinda here and there.
Yeah.
You've always just been such a gentleman.
Yeah.
Really just like a chill ass dude. You know,
I'm pretty chill. Yeah. Besides, like the personality as the frontman of Attila, I'm actually a pretty chilled out, mellow dude for the most part. Family man.
Yeah.
Live at home in Florida with my family.
Yeah.
Two kids and a naked cat. That's my life.
It's just crazy because I see, you know, we're on Warped Tour together, and every day I see the kids with their merch on, and a lot of them are very, like, a lot of them are the same kind of kid. They aren't all the same kind of kid. But
yeah.
A lot of them are that, like, you can tell they're in high school. They're pissed off.
Yeah.
They fucking hate their parents.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of that.
Parents probably told them not to listen to Attila, but because they said that we're their favorite band. Same thing with my parents telling me not to listen to Eminem when I was a kid, and I fucking snuck the album into my room, and I would listen to it every day, and it just felt good.
So is that where this whole band like stemmed from? Was that the vision that you had when you started this thing? Like, let's just be, like, obviously you never knew you were going to be here. You never knew we were going to sit on a fucking tour bus on Warped Tour, like the nicest bus on the tour. You got all these side businesses. You got all this. You got this empire, the Franz Empire. You never knew that was going to happen. But when you started music, was that what you wanted to do? Were you trying to channel that anger that you had as a kid into this band?
Pretty much. I think that's a good way to put it. I think that Attila is Attila because of all of our influences and how we grew up and just our personalities and such. Growing up in Atlanta, Georgia, a majority of what I listened to was rap music. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I loved rap music. I loved how in your face it always was. But at the same time, I felt like I really just love metal, like Pantera, you know, just really heavy metal. I liked how hard metal music hit, but I liked how in-your-face rap music was. So I think that the vision very early on was to combine, like, heavy-hitting metal with just really in-your-face, like, rap-style vibes. And, you know, like I said, growing up listening to like Eminem and stuff like that, I think I liked that he said shit that got under people's skin and really kind of raised your hairs and, you know, made you feel some type of way. And I growing up in Atlanta as well, most of the bands we were surrounded with were very, very like PG, like Christian bands and stuff like that.
Right?
So it was different. Because I knew that I didn't want to be like that. It just didn't fit with who I was and what I liked.
So your upbringing, because, you know, you right away were like, yeah, my parents wouldn't let me listen to Eminem or whatever. What was your upbringing like when you were a kid? Did you have, like, a classic family structure with, you know, a mom and a dad and brothers and sisters? Like, how was that for you growing up?
I grew up with a pretty, like, classic family. I would say, like, middle class. Nothing special. We never ate out at restaurants or did anything like too cool. We didn't really vacation much. Just kind of living in suburban Atlanta, kind of out in the boonies a little bit. and then, yeah, just pretty normal, I guess, average upbringing. My parents were very frugal and taught me to, I don't know, I guess be frugal with money. And if you want something, go out there and get it was kind of the mentality from day one. And I think that's a large part of why I am the way I am today as far as starting businesses and stuff is because my parents always pushed me even when I was like 6, 7 years old, you know, hey, you want to make your own money? You want to do something fun? Like start a business, like start a lemonade stand, like take the lawnmower and ask the neighbors if they want you to cut their lawn, like shit like that. And I think it just kind of stemmed from there. Like, the idea of working for myself and, like, doing things on my own and being independent was really cool, even at a super young age, like, younger than most kids, you know? Sure. So,
no, I've read about you, you know, selling golf balls to,
yeah,
you know, to my grandpa and stuff.
My grandpa worked at a golf range, so he would just scoop up all these golf balls, and like every month he would come over and visit and bring me just a trash bag with thousands of golf balls, and I would just organize it because my dad worked at a grocery store. He'd bring me all the empty egg cartons, and I would take the thousands of golf balls and sort them by brand, condition, put them in the empty egg cartons, load up my little red wagon, and just hustle. I'd probably walk like a few miles a day just around different neighborhoods, but I would look in the garage and see if they had a golf bag in their garage, and then I would go knock, and I mean, you couldn't resist me. I was a little 7-year-old hustler, and I went to your door, and I would work out a deal. I would cut you, you know, 3 for 2, like 3 dozen for 2, whatever, you know? But it was cool. Like, I was a little kid and I was hustling. I was making money as like a young kid, and it just kind of like built this foundation early on of where I was just like, hey, anything I want, I can do it. I can work by myself. I don't depend on anyone.
Very cool. And did you have brothers and sisters, or do you?
3 younger sisters, and I'm the oldest.
Okay.
So that's why things were more strict for me. I was the first child.
Yeah.
First child always gets it the worst, the most strict, most rules. You know, it's funny. I always talk with my parents about it. Looking back on it, like, technically, I was probably the most chill out of all the kids as far as, like, you know, looking back, I had it the most strict. But for the most part, I was a pretty good kid, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. I read that you said you got good grades in school, you know, that you did. You were like kind of top of your class, and you had scholarship offers and stuff, which is like, I think it's a cool thing that you say that, and I believe it to be true. I don't think you're just saying it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not true, it's still a good thing to tell kids. You know what I mean? I'm not saying it's not true, but it's like, that is a good thing to be like, you know what? Yes, you're an angry high school kid that loves my band because I'm saying this shit that shouldn't be said. But at the end of the day, an education's important.
Yeah,
not
of course.
Everybody can be the Franz.
Yeah, you got to read a lot of books to get where I'm at. Reading is important. Reading is what I stress to people more so than even like school, because like you got to face the fact that when you're a kid in school, like half the shit they teach you, you're not even going to care about or use, like, you know, trigonometry, calculus, all this shit. Like, I had to learn that I've never used ever once in my life. And then I wish they would stress more on like finances, like mortgages, how to manage your money better. There's so many crucial things they don't teach you. But I'd say the most important thing for anybody is just reading books and making sure you're very well-rounded.
I agree with you, man. It's like the one thing I remember when our band started making money and stuff, and I was like, you know, we were basically hiding money under the fucking mattress because we didn't know how taxes work.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't teach you how taxes work in school.
Exactly.
And it's so important.
So important.
Why don't they teach you that? You know what I mean?
Like, I think it's because they just kind of, at least in America, they kind of want to mold you to be like a normal member of society. They don't want you to think for yourself and have these great, brilliant ideas. They kind of want you to just fit into society's standards. They need restaurant workers. They need, I don't know, they kind of want to teach you what you don't need so that way you fit into some life you don't want to fit in or you think you do, you know? I don't know. It's kind of weird, but I think it's just kind of the way society's molded to kind of just spit people out, get them through school, spit them out, put them into college, spit them into a job and get them working like a normal kind of daily routine life.
But your family growing up the way you did, your parents probably expected that of you though at some point, right? I mean, I'm sure they probably have kind of normal jobs.
Yeah.
And maybe your sisters do too.
Yeah, everyone in my family except me has like a normal, just average, modest job or whatever. And I think that's also what they expected of me. Especially being that I got a free scholarship to college. So it was kind of like, you know, there was almost like a figurative like gun to my head, like, hey, you have a free scholarship, you have to go. But at the same month that I graduated high school, I just hopped straight in the tour van and just started touring the country nonstop. We were already touring a little bit back when I was 16. So yeah, I'm 27 now. Started the band when I was 14. We started hitting the road as early as like 15, 16 years old.
It's crazy.
I would just self-book all of our tours on MySpace back in the day.
Yeah. It's crazy. Wild to think about that those days, right? And it's especially wild to think about you being so young, but it makes sense if you're an entrepreneur, like you said, like age 8, age 10. It's not that big a deal to book shows at 15, I guess.
Yeah, it was just another thing added to my list. I would skip all my homework, skip all my schoolwork, push everything else to the side, and I would sit on the computer with the dial-up internet for 20 hours a day booking shows on MySpace.
Totally. And like, most of the guests on my show, and not all the guests, but a lot of them are, you know, more in the like punk rock world, you know, the Warped Tour world or whatever, underground music. And I was thinking about your band a little bit today, and I was reading some of your lyrics, and I was thinking about how, like you said, rappers say things like that you say, and there are even some rock bands, but more in the mainstream realm, or like, you know,
yeah,
that kind of not the punk rock world that are saying these things.
Yeah,
but I think
of course.
Part of the problem that you guys have and why people give you such a hard time and give you shit is because, not necessarily because of what you're saying, but because what you're saying when you're also supposed to be in a punk rock place, like coming from a place of punk rock. So my question is for you is, well, that's something you can talk about, but just how did you get into punk rock and DIY touring and all that stuff at that age, when you were in high school?
Yeah, totally. So it all stems back to, me being about 10 years old. I would start going to New Jersey every summer from Georgia because I didn't have many friends in Georgia. I lived in the sticks, like I said, kind of suburb, not very many friends to hang out with. My cousins live in New Jersey. I would go up and visit them. And just right away, I'll never forget, like, my cousins and their circle of friends. Some of them were in a band together. Super ironic, like, story, but one of the people that was in that band that inspired me to be in a band actually works for my band now and is our best friend. His name's Billy. So like they had a band and I just would see them playing music together, and they got me into Taking Back Sunday, From Autumn to Ashes, just Under Oath, all these bands from back in the day, that it just really sparked me. Like I couldn't believe it that you could actually pick up an instrument and do it. Like it seems like when you're 10 years old, playing in a band seems so far-fetched or a crazy idea, but just seeing these people doing it, picking up the instruments, playing music synchronized together, right, playing basement shows. They would drag me to like Infest and like New Jersey Metal and Hardcore Fest, where I was like, at a young age, I was watching Madball, I was watching Sick of It All, I was watching all these like death metal bands and like just crazy shit, and I just loved it. I never felt more, I guess, comfortable in my life, like that I belonged.
So you
than
felt
when
the
I
community
went.
Aspect of it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
I felt a very strong sense of community from early on, and I just, the music spoke to me. You know, being a kid in the suburbs, all I had was the radio. The radio was either, you know, just a bunch of shit I didn't really like, or rap music, which I liked. So you take this, me liking rap music to begin with, boom, you introduce all this like heavy, crazy, like badass music, and then I guess like you just mix it all up, and that's kind of like where I was at the point is, I want to start a band now. I see how it's done. It's possible. Nothing's out of reach. I know I'm young, but I can still make this happen. And then just combining my love for two different genres and kind of is what started it out.
So when you came back from New Jersey, whenever, you know, maybe you'd gone a couple years, whatever, but when you came back and you'd seen these bands and you'd heard about the hardcore scene and punk rock and everything, you went back to Atlanta. What did you do? Did you get a guitar? Did you try to find people that could play guitar?
Yeah.
What did you do? What was your approach?
Step one, I think I got a guitar. I picked it up. I tried to play it. I tried to like look up lessons, tab books, everything. I sucked so bad. I sucked so bad at guitar. Then I got a drum set. I sucked really bad at drums. I then thought I wanted to play bass. Bass was a little easier than guitar. Yeah. I had someone giving me lessons. And growing up, I actually lived nearby the bass player of Foreigner. And he would actually help me out once in a while and give me tips and pointers crazy, yeah, crazy ass story.
That is weird.
But yeah, basically, I just kind of sucked at everything. And then one day, I'll never forget, I was at the mall. I met these kids that were in a band. They were in high school. I was still in middle school. So I was 12 at the time, maybe 13. And they were like, hey, Battle of the Bands is in 1 month. We need a screamer for our band. And it was just something that seemed so strange to me that I had never done it. I didn't know if I could do it or if I was able to fit the position, but I just could not turn down the opportunity to actually be with a band. And I just figured, fuck it. I tried everything else. I sucked at everything. Yeah. I'm just going to tell them that I can do this, grab the mic and see what comes out. And that's kind of how it all began for me. You know, I was the middle school kid that was about to play with the high school kids. They came to my basement. Everyone hooked up their amps, had my shitty drum set back there. And then I'll never forget, the first two songs I ever played was Smash Your Enemies by Hatebreed and Skin Like Winter by Zayo.
Zayo. And,
yeah.
I haven't thought about Zayo in a while.
Yeah, totally. So I just grabbed the mic and ripped it. And I remember like belching it out and then looking back and just seeing like a nod of approval by everyone of like, yeah, dude, like you're killing it. And that was kind of like the big like affirming moment in my like heart that like, hey, this is it. I finally found my place. Like, I can do this. This is my role. I'm the front man.
And you couldn't talk Boom. For like a week after that.
Probably. Oh, yeah. I was destroyed for a week. I was destroyed for a week. But a big thing I always tell kids, though, that are trying to get into like being a vocalist is that it's definitely something that you get better at with time.
Sure.
You know, I had a little bit of natural talent, but I grew with time. And I only got better the more I did it. So that was the beginning of it all for me. And then I went to high school. I was a freshman. And at the time, our drummer was a senior. He handed me a demo from his band at the time that was called Southern Creation. We were all like Pantera metalhead kids. And I was a freshman, and this 18-year-old handed me a CD of their demo, and I remember popping it in and being like, this is the coolest band I've ever heard. And then that's the band that went on to become Attila. I went to tryout, made the tryout, we changed the name to Attila. The rest is history.
And the name change, I'm not going to go off on the name of the band. It's something I typically avoid in these things, but the whole reason we're talking about this or talking today pretty much is because I put on a thing on Twitter a while back that was like, all right, worst band names, throw them out there. So people were throwing out, you know, all these different band names, and like I think the worst one was Betty White Titty Fuck.
Oh god.
I was like, wow,
Jesus.
I just offended Franz with that one. No, so I was like, my god. And then somebody said Attila, and I was like, say what you want about the fucking band, but that's a great band name.
Yeah. And that, going back to the whole like origin of the band name, I made it loud and clear to the dudes when we were picking the name. I was like, look, no blood, no bleeding, no dying death, no five word names, yeah, nothing fucking stupid. I was like, one word, let's make it cool, let's think about it. Someone was in the bookstore, saw a book about Attila the Hun killing everyone, fucking shit up, and I remember the text, like, Attila ? And it was just, yep, done.
There you go, done.
Done, easy.
But did you know it was going to be that kind of a band? Like, I mean, obviously the band's evolved. Fuck, it's been, you know, it's been half your life.
Half my life in the band, exactly. Yeah.
So obviously it's evolved, but did you know it's like, okay, I want to be this offensive, in-your-face band? Like, did you even know back then when you picked the name?
I knew very early on. So here's another story that not many people know. I don't think it's in many... Ooh, beer burp. In
I
many
got one
stories.
Of those too. Yeah, we're drinking a couple Bud Lights Ooh. Right now.
All right, Frosty Beer is giving me the burp. So most people don't know this. I don't even think I've mentioned it very much, but there was a band from Atlanta a very long time ago, about the same time Attila started, that was very influential to me. They were called Fight Paris. Do you remember them?
That name is familiar, but I don't think I remember the band.
They were like a firework. They exploded out of left field and then just fizzled out and went away very quickly because their singer went to jail, got in some trouble for some shit, some heavy shit. But right out of the gates, this band was playing like Southern style metal that was heavy, in your face. I think the first track of the album just said, "Damn right, that's lost my bitch. She fucking sucked my goddamn dick." Right. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, this is so fucking cool. We're in Atlanta. Every single band is a Christian band. Like, yeah. Jesus Christ. And I'm just like, sure. This is weird. I don't fuck with any of this. It's so weird. I know I'm in the Bible Belt, and everyone's going to disagree with me for not being in a Christian band, but I just don't vibe with this personally. And then Fight Paris came out talking about sex and drugs, and I just wanted fucking fuck and drink alcohol and all this shit. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard. And like I said, they were like a firework. I think they were on Trustkill, that might be wrong. I forget which label they were on. It might have been Ferret, actually.
Yeah.
They popped off. They were big for like a minute. They really had a lot of buzz, and then they went away. And I remember thinking like that was my vision I kind of had too, but that band popped up and went away so quick. So I think from early on, yes, it was my goal to be heavy and offensive. And you can track, I think some people think we're a new band, or some people might only know us as far as like a couple albums deep or a few albums deep, but you can look back at the shit I was writing at age 16 and it's pretty much the same. It's about you know, fucking doing strikeouts. It's about one night stands. It's about like living your life, doing whatever the fuck you want. It's kind of always been like the theme since day one. Sure. You know what I mean? It's been very, I guess, true to myself is the biggest thing I just tell people. It's just been writing what I've always wanted to write.
But when you were in high school and you were getting good grades and everything and working on the Empire at an early age, you were still like getting fucked up, doing crazy shit. Like,
yeah.
I know that you have a felony because you couldn't get into Canada. I don't know what that's about. But like, you've done some crazy shit. This isn't all talk.
No, it's not all talk. And I think I'm definitely more tamed down now because I just respect being a father so much that I never want to be that dad that like dies on tour or something crazy. You know what I mean?
Right.
So for that reason, I'm definitely very toned down because I love my kids and my family so much. But yes, my teenage years, I probably partied harder as a teenager than the top whatever five hardest partying bands on this tour combined. You know what I mean? I was fucking apeshit crazy, dude. Everything, drugs, alcohol, like girls, whatever, you name it. It was like the wildest period of my life. I was off the rails and it was just like, whatever, no one can stop me. Like, I make straight A's, bitch. What are you gonna tell me? Make better grades? Like, no one can tell me shit. Like, I'm smart, I'm crazy, like, fuck it, who cares? So it was just kind of, yeah, I mean, no one could talk shit. Like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I'm always on time. I've got all these jobs on the side. I'm working at restaurants, doing this, doing that. So what? I want to tour with my band, I want to party, I want to fuck shit up. So yeah, shit got really wild for a period of years. And then I think as I've grown older, I've just really become more, I guess, mature, and I see the big picture now. You know what I'm saying? Before, I didn't really see a big picture. Now I see, like, you know, how the world works, and I like the future.
Absolutely. And I think that there's obviously, like, if you're a smart guy, you realize, like, it's not overly healthy to just consume mass amounts of alcohol and drugs
for
a long period of time. I don't know if you had any problems with addiction or not. I mean, that's obviously a thing that's prevalent.
I'm very thankful to have a non-addictive personality. So in the past, when I were doing things that were highly addictive, I was able to still separate, surprisingly, because I've seen so many of my close friends not be able to separate from the substance and go down the path of either, you know, death, jail, whatever, like bad life. And I think that's another thing that kind of wakes you up along the road of life is when you see people doing the same exact shit you're doing, but their outcome is way different. And it's kind of like, well, how long can you keep this going for before your outcome is the same as theirs?
But is it hard though, knowing that you're different and that you have sort of like, no matter how fucked up you are on whatever night of the week, you know, in the back of your head, I have to be here, I have to be here, I have to do this for my own productivity, to get this, to achieve my goals. However, like, when you're up there in your band saying, I don't give a fuck, basically. Almost like, I don't give a fuck, you shouldn't give a fuck, who gives a fuck? Isn't that almost a little dangerous to people that can't really understand it or separate the things? Or is that just kind of not really your problem?
That's a tough question. You know, I think everyone is different, and you can tell a crowd one thing and half the crowd can interpret it one way and half the crowd another. It's almost even based down to an individual basis. Like I said, I've been able to be like completely wild and crazy, but still maintain like a good head on my shoulders and still be able to, you know, for the most part, make good choices. But yeah, there are people out there that are just destined to not make good choices. So I don't know. I think music is like any other art, and I think the listeners have to take it for what it is, you know. And some of the shit I say is really crazy and fucked up, but I mean, what's at the end of the day, what is the difference between that and watching a really crazy fucked up movie?
Right.
You know, I think people, sometimes people nowadays at least, take music almost too seriously, to the point where everything becomes so literal. And I wish that people would look at music more as an art form, or more as like entertainment versus like a scripture. Like, I'm not trying to be, you know, Jesus Christ in the Bible or something and like tell people how to live their life. You know, but at the same time, I do want people to let loose and have fun, but I'm not necessarily like, take it for a grain of salt is all I'm saying.
Well, that's what I wrestle with it too, you know, because like I said, the whole thing about, you know, punk rock and that, how people kind of expect, you're getting it, don't worry about it.
Sorry,
No, dude, no worries. I was just saying, like, that's where I wrestle with things too, because, you know, you come from like a punk rock scene or something where there's this community and there's this, you know, you're a member of this sort of society where people are supposed to be there for each other and you're supposed to be having some kind of like influence on the generations that are going to come after you and all this stuff. And that's just kind of where I'm like, okay,
like, yeah,
go ahead.
No, I get it. I am fully aware that I am like the black sheep of this music family. And I will say this, that beyond all the criticism, and I think people overthink things, at the end of the day, I'm out there in Warped Tour every single day, like hanging out with hundreds and hundreds of kids. Literally, I meet so many people a day. And I think that the overall general consensus that I get from the most diehard fans, you know, is that, thank you so much for your music, your attitude, everything, the way you carry yourself, your songs, your lyrics is what has helped me to not take life so seriously and say, fuck it to all the bullies and all the people that are bringing me down at school, everyone that pushes me around. I put Attila on and I feel like a fucking badass. And all of a sudden I don't care about getting picked on. I don't care about, you know, the shit people are saying to me. I don't care that my boyfriend broke up with me or girlfriend or whatever. Everything feels better now. And I think that I always tell people this, but this is from personal experience. The very like positive message punk music as a kid didn't get through to me. It didn't get through my head. It never could have. It's not what worked for me. But the really fucked up, crazy music is kind of what really drilled into my head and captivated me and made me feel good. So I think that it's hard for people to understand, especially when these other bands out here, I understand they're trying to push this like different messages. Everyone's got their own message or idea. And I do agree, you should want to help people and make people's lives better. I just think it's hard for people to understand that Attila makes people's lives better by making them not give a fuck, by making them feel more confident in themselves when they're someone that may have been getting picked on or may have been dealing with adversity in their family or friends or whatever. So it's different. Like I said, it's like a different medicine for different people. Some people just need something really fucking crazy to get through to them.
Are people ever surprised, like when they come up to this Day Sick tent or whatever and take a selfie with you, how kind of gentle and nice and like respectful you are, because they see you on stage, or they see what you,
yeah,
how you are in your records, and it's it's not the same Chris Franczak, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So do people ever say to you like, oh my god, you're like,
you're
nice.
So nice,
you're not, yeah, like, you know, you're, yeah, not angry and you're not aggressive and you're not being too cool, like,
yeah, yeah, I definitely get that, but I think also it actually doesn't get pointed out a whole lot, because I think people just kind of expect bands to be, you know, nice, because a lot of bands, for the most part, at least when they're meeting fans, from are nice. Even the bands I see out here, like, I see bands that are kind of like dickheads to other bands or other people, and they're even, right, they're nice to their fans. So I think fans, yeah, kind of expect you to be nice. So I don't really get called out on it too much,
okay,
but people will be like, oh, you're nice, you have a great smile. Like, I don't know, you hug really good or something. Like, I'm like, yeah, cool, hell yeah,
that's cool. And I guess the other question I have for you is, like, obviously your lyrics are pretty intense, subject matter of your songs is pretty intense. Has there been anything you've written it down, like, whether it was something you showed to the band or not, even just like sitting on your couch writing words, where you were like, nah, I just can't go there, I can't use that word, I can't go down that subject or whatever. Has there been that stuff?
Yes, there has been. I've written stuff that is, and that is really fucked up. And I think another thing is, like, as you get to know me more on like a personal basis, you'll realize, like, yeah, I'm a nice person, I'm a nice guy, I've got good intentions, but my mind is also a really fucked up place. Like, these thoughts aren't forced out. These thoughts have a place that they come from, and it's my really fucked up head. I'm really fucking weird. I'm super strange. I'm honestly, I'm a pretty fucked up dude.
Right.
And I think of all these things. So yeah, I mean, a lot of the things I think of are too fucked up to be in Attila songs. I promise you that. And it, you know, it really just depends on who I'm recording with at the time, the state that I'm in during,
yeah,
recording, you know, like, yeah, if I'm on some shit, or if I'm whatever, like, whatever's going on in my head at the moment, sometimes I'll just, whatever's on my head, do it, fuck it, who cares? And I put it out there, and you know, sometimes there's backlash, sometimes it ends up being the biggest fucking song of all.
Well, I know I've heard you say, like, people are like, oh, well Chris, why don't you, you know, talk about these things, these other uplifting things, and you say, well, I do that, and when I do them, nobody notices. Nobody cares.
Very true.
So people only talk about the songs that are all fucked up.
Yep.
You know?
It's true. So if you were really to dive into the Attila discography, we've got like 7 albums,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you put out an album, like, so you put albums out very, very often.
Yeah. We have a huge catalog, and if you look through all of our music, we have plenty of songs that are not about partying. They're not about getting fucked up. There's nothing offensive. We have, like, I would say we even have probably 5, 6, 7, 8 songs that have no foul language at all. They're radio friendly. They're
right.
Great. They're great songs. But all those songs in the history of us as a band, they always get swept under the rug. I think we have a lot of songs that have good messages. You know, Horse Pig is one of my favorite songs. That song never really took off. You know, we've got songs like Break My Addiction that are very, like, personal. We've got songs that are, you know, it's just, I'll put them out there, and I'm happy to get it off my chest and put,
yeah,
personal stuff into songs, but we've never ever had a song that was personal, meaningful, or without bad words that's ever become popular, or
right,
even remotely popular enough to put it in our set list. And
sure,
I'll tell you what, I'm not butthurt about it at all. I'm not upset. I've still done it, so I can say, hey, I have done it. I've put them in our albums, and
yep,
it's really just, I respect the fans' choice to like what they like. It's their choice. We put the album out, whatever song they love the most, that's the single at the end of the day.
Right, you're right. And is there anything that you were like looking back, because you do have a big discography, there's,
yes,
a couple songs you're like, maybe I should have maybe not said that, or any regrets with any lyrics? Because, I mean, I know you got to own it, and I know that you're the,
yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
person that, personality-wise, that you're going to own what you do.
I own it. I will say this. For not, I I own every song, and I still to this day will own this song, and it's one of my favorites. But Proving Grounds, for whatever reason, ruffled people's feathers so fucking hard still to this day. And it's... I fucking hate that it ruffled people's feathers so bad, because the message of the song is not offensive at all. The song is not offensive. But people were really upset by my choice of words, because I say, so who's the faggot now? And and that is really what set people off past their limits. So I will say, I've said it 100 times, but the song is nothing to do with sexual orientation or whatever it may be. The song is literally me responding to being a fucking a kid my whole life that was called a faggot my whole life. Yeah. I was never cool. I was the kid called a faggot 20 times a day to my face. And all the kids that called me faggot in high school are working at kiosks in the middle of the fucking mall right now. So who's the faggot now was my response in Proving Grounds. And I get it. There's words that people get super upset by. Yeah. I understand. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, there's freedom of expression. That's the sentence I chose to use in that song. I will own up to it. I said it. You know, if it offends people, it is what it is, but it's said in a completely non-offensive way. And
and that's a word I don't throw around. You know, and I would certainly never say it in a song. But I understand where that comes from, why people are offended. But to be completely honest, I also understand how that line can resonate with kids that are going through what you went through. Because there still are those kids every day.
Yeah, that get called names, that get bullied all the time. And
like you said, that is what, you know, they have, you know. Are you done
song,
your beer?
Huh? Yeah, I might need another beer soon.
I brought something.
Oh, shit. No way. Is that what I think it is? You are a savage.
I brought a box of Franzia to hopefully drink with the Franz.
And you
boxed wine.
And you blocked out the A into an O, so it's officially Franzia.
That's right. This is maybe some new branding for you.
This is incredible, dude.
You could, I don't know.
This is bringing me back to the All-Stars tour days with Sleeping with Sirens and Memphis May Fire, and we'd be out in the trailer of the 15 Passenger slapping the bag. The bag wine, baby.
Just sucking out the nipple and the rest of the last in the bag. Do you want a little bit?
So sick. Yeah, let's rip it, dude.
Rip a little... Franzia,
yeah,
I even brought cups.
This is sick.
Put the mic up there. Let's get the sound of the dribble.
There we go. Hell yeah, this is legit, dude.
I'll give you here,
I'll hold your cup. I got it.
I'm a team player. I got knees.
That's right. We're drinking wine. Drinking the Franzia with the Franz.
So I'm stoked. So I didn't mention this, but...
Hey, cheers, dude.
Cheers, bro. Cheers. Your band is definitely a band that I really fell in love with growing up. You guys... I think you guys and Senses Fail about the same time.
Yeah. We were always in this kind of the same scene. And I guess you talk about punk rock and like kind of learning it from the New Jersey scene, like Senses Fail being from New Jersey.
Yeah, Thursday, My Chemical Romance. Those bands were all very, very like big to me.
Yeah. Dude, no, it's good. You know what's funny about your band? The first time I'd heard your name around a little bit.
Yeah.
But I hadn't heard your music or anything. And we were getting ready to do Warped Tour in 2013. And we hadn't done it since 2009. And I was just like looking. I was like, we got to make a merch tent. And I'm kind of like, what are bands doing for merch tents these days? Like, what do people put on their tents, or what are like colors? Just like, just kind of curious. So I'm on Google. So I Google Warped Tour merch tents, and I get like a bunch of image searches. And there's one that's kind of like a wide like landscape of a hill with a bunch of tents on it. So I'm looking at the tents, and in the foreground, there's this girl wearing a lime green shirt, and she's in the foreground, and it says on the back, "Touching every fucking titty." On the back of the shirt,
I'm in every fucking city, and touching every fucking titty.
Yeah, and I saw that shirt, and I was like, "What?" It's, you know, it's like in hardcore like style font on the back.
Oh yeah,
and I go, "What the fuck is this shirt? Who would put this on the shirt?" So I literally opened a new browser and Googled that, "Touching every fucking titty," and sure enough, the lyrics to your song popped up, and I went, oh my God, who is this band? What are they singing about? This is, and I like instantly was like, okay, this band is like clearly like tongue in cheek. Like,
yeah,
there's some humor here.
Yeah, of
with
course.
This kind of line, especially
we're humorous people.
But then all of a sudden, I start researching it more and more, and I'm like asking people if they've heard of your band, and they're like, yeah, I don't know, like. You know, and it wasn't like, yeah, it was like a little bit like, I don't know if I agree with like what they're doing.
Yeah.
But that was my introduction to your band.
That's fucking awesome.
And I still think that those lyrics are just like.
Oh, dude. Like, the line after is so fucking off the wall. Like, just the whole, that whole fucking section is fucked, man. Like.
Right.
But it's. I wrote that when I was. That's once again going back into the time capsule. That's what I wrote when I was 16 years old. That's me being me from day one, you know,
sure.
11 years ago. So
well, yeah,
just
I mean,
crazy, weird shit. I'm just a weird, weird dude. Like I said, that's what we like. You know, when you hang out with us at night and we're all having drinks, like we're going to say some weird stuff. Our mascot is a 4 foot long dildo and an alien, you know, we're weird dudes, but we own up to it. We're not trying to like hide the weirdness, you know. We're nice to people. We'll hold
right.
the door open for the women. We're respectful. We don't treat people, you know, how they don't want to be treated, but we're really fucking weird dudes.
I think that's where the line gets blurred between the reputation and the actual. Cuz it's like one thing for someone to be like, I say all this fucked up shit. I don't believe it. I'm this guy. I'm the family man, like, but you're like, well, I'm a little fucked up though. Like, you know,
yeah.
you're like, you're not saying like I'm not that person. You're saying I'm like kind of that person. Is that more accurate?
Yeah, that's
very accurate.
And
is that why people
accurate.
Get so confused?
Dude, I'm
people
very
are confused
I'm
about
very
your
confusing. And it's understandable. Like, how can someone so smart be so weird and offensive, and how can he say that that's who he is if he's got a stable family life and shit like this? It's like
right.
I get it, but you know, these we are weird fucking dudes. We're all crazy, and it is what it is. But it's there. I think like I said, there's a way to position yourself in society where you're not just a total dickhead, you know, fucking everyone over at all times. Craziness.
Sure.
So I don't know. We at the end of the day, we are humans, you know, and we do care for each other, and we care for our fans, and we care for our friends on Warped, and we're happy to be here. And so
one thing that you're doing is the franzak.com website, where you're able to, this is not an ad, by the way,
shout out to franzak.com,
where basically for $50 a month, I say kids, but really anyone can basically get your phone number, text you advice, ask you what to do, I assume in pretty much any facet of life, but more to do with business and music.
Yes.
Where did you get that idea? How many people are doing it, and how do you find that?
So the idea came to me, I would say, I started the website in, I believe, the very end of 2015. It's been almost 2 years. The idea came to me because constantly I get flooded with messages about like, hey, Franz, how do I do this? How do I start a band? How do I start a successful clothing company? How do I do, you know, whatever it may be? Like, you're a smart businessman. Help me out. And it's not that I don't want to help these people out. It's just that so many people are literally flooding my inboxes, my email, you name it, that I was just thinking, well, hey, what if there's a way that I can create a website, put up as much generalized information as possible via blogs, videos, you name it, and then also go a step further to where I can get personal with these people, and if they've watched the videos and they've read the blogs about helping them start their clothing line or helping them start a band or whatever it may be, how can I help them a step further by giving them my phone number and allowing them to contact me and get even more personal
specific
with it.
Specific advice, yeah.
With their specific advice, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was a very like obscure idea, but I just said, hey, I want to make this happen. And if I could make this happen, I'm sure it would be pretty huge. So I found a company that was able to create my website for me. I contracted them out. We created the site. And yeah, basically, I don't want to get into too many specific details about subscribers amounts, but I will say that in the beginning, like as in the first 6 months or so, it was huge, almost like overbearing, too much to handle type
right.
shit.
That's what I was going to ask, yeah.
It was really overwhelming. You got to imagine, like, people were really fucking stoked about it. So I had a shitload of subscribers. It was a lot to deal with. It kind of, like, took a toll on me mentally. And I think a lot of them were just wanting to say hi or, hey, can you send me a selfie and, like, weird stuff. But through the thick of it all, there was definitely a lot of people that had really great ideas that just needed some direction. And that's where it still to this day feels very rewarding to me to be doing mm-hmm. this, is because I've literally seen people start successful businesses, and I've been able to help them with their vision, and I've been able to help them because I've had so many mistakes over the course of my career that I can tell them, like, these are all the mistakes I've made, beware, this will happen, you know, and kind of prep them of what to prepare for. And it's cool because there might not be that many people that are actually driven, that want to utilize my service to its full potential. But the people that do, I've been able to really be hands-on with them and help them go above and beyond. And that's a very, very satisfying feeling.
Sure. Is it hard? Was it hard even just to, like, you talk to somebody and they don't hear from them for a couple weeks, and then you're like, oh, like remembering, like, who's who? Because there must be so many people that were in the same kind of boat and stuff, and like the specifics, which mixing up which one's which. Like, I imagine that would be really tough.
It made it really time consuming, because sometimes I would have to look back in our messages and kind of see like where we started, so that way I can make sure that I'm staying specific to every individual.
Right.
But I can say that now, 2 years later, it's a lot more manageable. So it's not something I'm pulling my hair out about. It's just something that is fun and rewarding to do. You know, when I wake up in the morning, I drink coffee and I'm able to talk with people and help them reach their goals, pretty much.
So you have a little bit of the day set aside for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a smart way to do it. Very cool. And the Spur app, I tried to download it today. Is that still a thing? It's a really cool idea.
Thank you so much. It's not still a thing. The company is dissolving. I went through a period, I would say, like 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago at this point, where I wanted to do a million different things. And one of the things I wanted to do was to create my own app and have it blow up and become like the next big social media.
Yeah.
Sometimes my dreams are so fucking big that it's like I don't have anyone to slap me and tell me no, because they know I'm kind of like crazy and like off the rails. And but looking back, I would say that it was a very, very expensive and costly lesson in my life, because I learned from it. And at the end of the day, I guess it would be marked as a failure because it didn't succeed and the app is not still around. And it cost me a lot of money. Right. But I would just say that that was a big, like, learning experience for myself, because I try to make positive out of any scenario. So if I were to tell people the amount of money I lost, technically, people would probably have a fucking heart attack. But at the end of the day, I view it with a smile and know that I'm a much smarter person because I participated in that. And at the end of the day, it failed.
Well, it could have been big upside too.
Yeah,
you know, like
been.
Those apps, when they blow up, they get sold. Like, not we're not talking millions anymore.
Billions, dude.
So it's like,
it's huge.
That kind of investment, I'm sure.
It's rolling the dice, right, and I think that there's ways to make it less of a gamble and less based on luck and more precise. But I just didn't have a big enough team. My issue is that I took on this big, I guess, workload, and I was just one human. You know what I mean?
Sure.
As one person, it's hard to manage how much I had on my plate. So, you know, it's a learning experience for me. So it was fun while it lasted, and I think that Spur could have become something huge. But it's funny because, like, social media is adapting so quick that essentially, like, both Twitter, Instagram, Facebook adopted a lot of the ideas I was using before they were. Because the idea was, I wanted to create a photo app that was super simple. You just upvote or downvote, so similar to like Reddit in terms of upvotes, or Imgur. I think it's Imgur. but where you just upvote, downvote, no comments. So it was less about people's opinions and more about like giving the spotlight to people who are producing truly great content. So if you post something that's truly amazing, you could be a nobody with no followers and you could rise to the top because what you created is awesome. And it was less about followers. It was less about fame. It was less about opinions. It was supposed to just shine light on cool moments of your life. And you know, it's just a very competitive world. And I was one person with a huge, huge vision. And these people and apps that are succeeding have hundreds of employees. So I, as one person, no matter how smart you are, you can't compete with a hundred smart people working around the clock. So
it is
difficult
to believe, like, you know, when some of those apps, they seem so simple and you're just like, look at it. You're like, oh, it's just, that's all it is. And you don't really realize like how much goes into behind
so
the
much.
Scenes. It's crazy.
So much.
It's crazy. So, what other stuff do you have going on, other than Attila right now? I'm sure there's always a lot of projects you're working on.
Yeah, there's always a lot. My main endeavor outside of Attila is my clothing company, Stay Sick, and my record label, Stay Sick Recordings.
Of course, yeah.
And Stay Sick Recordings, I tell you what, that's probably the most like rewarding slash fun venture, because being in Attila for over 13 years now, starting a record label brings back the same feelings that I had when I was young and just starting out, because I'm able to put myself in the shoes of these young bands just starting off, and I relate to them on so many levels. It's really cool. It's kind of like flashback in time. So I feel like when the bands on my label are reaching certain milestones and growing and getting bigger tours, it's fun to celebrate those victories with them, but from a different perspective of not being in the band. So my record label is very, very something I'm very passionate about. We have a lot of really cool bands. We've got bands like Vesta Collide, Spite, Enterprise Earth. We have a very heavy lineup. We've got Afterlife. They're kind of new metal. Backwards. They're pretty sick. They're kind of like libertarian, like hardcore band. It's fucking cool. Like we have a ton of really cool, diverse lineup. It's rad.
How big is the label? Who works on it? Like obviously you can't do it all yourself.
Yeah,
so
of course.
Who helps you out with that? What's the operation like?
It's me and my partner Mike Milford, who's Attila's manager, and he's worked for Artery and Artery Recordings. So he has a lot of experience with like the back end work of a label.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of experience obviously with like social media and marketing and whatnot. So combined, that's, you know, the force of the label. And we have our team, we have a publicist, we have like a social media guy that keeps everything up to date, and we have our distribution through Equal Vision Records. So
We're
cool. We're very much like a full blown label, and it's very fun. It's a fun like business. Just being completely transparent, it doesn't make me any money at all. At least not now. It's more of like a long term business, but it's very rewarding just to see bands like growing and being able to push them and help them. It's fun. It's more just rewarding than anything, you know, and it's fun because it's directly involved with the field I'm in. So
yeah, and Stay Sick Clothing obviously is a big thing for you. It's been very financially viable for you.
Yes.
It's been big, very successful.
Huge.
And I always wonder, you know, because you got this dynamic where Attila, you know, you're on the Warped Tour, you also have the Stay Sick Clothing. Is there any like issues with the band, like where you're like, okay, Attila, we're doing this much money, and then like Franz has all this stuff on the side? Is there ever like, are you guys cool about understanding everybody's different role, or is there ever kind of like anybody in the band being like, oh well, you know, Franz is doing this because he's at the Stay Sick tent all day taking selfies for his clothing company? Is there any like resentment there?
There is a little bit. You know, just to be totally honest, you know, and it's kind of like one of those things where, you know,
this is the Singer Syndrome podcast, right? So like,
yeah,
we, you know, we're allowed to talk about how hard our lives are, you know?
Yeah, our lead singer problems. I'm able to put myself in other people's shoes and I understand it, but at the same time, like, this is a company I started 6 years ago, Stay Sick, and it's something that I've been very passionate about and people love it. And I think sometimes I have to explain, like, look, our band sells really well. We're doing great. Like, there's no issues, but not every single person wants to wear an Attila t-shirt. Like, some people don't even like right. band t-shirts. Some people just want to wear a cool, badass clothing line t-shirt, you know? And that's kind of where I fill the void. And yeah, I know I promote it a lot, and that's like my baby, you know? So I want to see it become as big as humanly possible. But at the same time, I definitely put in just as much effort into Attila, and we, you know, it is what it is, you know. It's like I understand both sides of the, I guess, story, or both perspectives, but it's two different things. And you know, what's any different than that compared to Black Craft or all these other clothing lines sure, out here on Warped? You know, it's yeah. just it's another tent. And
yep.
So
no, exactly. Well, it's a little more associated with the Attila brand. Like, the one thing that I always thought was really genius about Attila was, you know, bands have logos and all that stuff. You guys literally have a color.
Yeah.
Having, like, I've never heard of a band doing that. It's genius. Yeah, you guys yeah. literally, like, I see something that's like lime green or something with lime, I'm like, oh, it's got to be
Attila.
It's got to be Attila. You know, and that, where did you come up with that idea? Because that's a crazy, I'm sure there's other branding, but I think of it, it's like almost like, you know, Starbucks. When you're yeah. walking down the street, you're like, is that a Starbucks? I'm not sure.
It's a green
it's
umbrella.
Always that exact green color.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? So I always thought that was cool that you guys did that, or you did that.
Yeah. I think it just kind of dives into another thing people don't really know much about me as an individual. But I mean, I would go to say that I am a marketing/branding genius of sorts. I don't know. Not trying to, like, all right, lead singer syndrome.
I'm not
going
to say
My
you're
bad.
Wrong, but I'm not going to say you're wrong either. Because yeah. I think anybody that listens to this, they if they have an opinion on you at all, they can say what they want about what you say in songs. They can say
yeah,
about
of course.
Whatever, the way you put yourself out there. But nobody's going to say that you don't know, like, that you're not a smart
I know
smart
marketing and branding. It's yeah. It's my expertise, marketing and branding. So I've always kind of sat back and said, hey, you know, people don't necessarily connect with certain things as much as they connect with a color or a symbol or something. It's all about simplifying your approach and really pushing it out there. And that's kind of why the whole idea for our new album was to not even have our fucking name on the cover, to just have a symbol, the chaos symbol.
Yeah.
And I think it's very representative of us as a band and the album in general, but the chaos symbol on a bright ass green background, and everything we've always had within our, you know, artwork or stage setup has always been that bright green. So yeah. it's kind of, you know, it's just like taking the branding to the next level of drilling it into people's heads, pretty much.
Absolutely. And before I let you go, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but obviously Sharp Tone Records, my boy Sal.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's a bit of a departure from Artery. I know you're still working with some people that were at Artery before.
Mm-hmm.
What's the future got for Attila with new music and moving forward?
So we're always writing. Me especially. I'm constantly just spitting out ideas. I don't know if you do the same thing, but I'm always like beatboxing ideas into my phone, my voice recordings.
Oh yeah.
So like my voice recordings is literally just like right now it's like I don't know, like 12 unused songs that I've yet to track, or like breakdowns, or like weird patterns, or weird fucked up one-liners. I don't know. Just
right.
chorus ideas, you name it. Like, so I'm constantly like laying down ideas. So I think after Warped Tour, we're taking kind of probably the biggest break of our career. We're going to take like 6 months off, which is wild. We've never had that big of a break. We've always been grinding nonstop. So we're going to take a big break. We're going to sit back, but we're going to stay active. And I think the goal is to go ahead and link up with multiple different producers and just record, and just kind of make it a very cool, fun process to where instead of being bogged in a studio for 2 months or whatever, we just say, hey, whenever we feel creative, we're going to fly to a studio, whatever one we choose, and we're going to record a few songs.
Yeah.
And then we're going to chill out, feel creative, fly to another studio, record a few songs with them, and just kind of dick around, do that over the span of time, and then boom, we'll have another album.
Have a record,
so
yeah.
I think the idea is to just do that pretty much.
Yeah, you're able to come up with a new album without having that stressful, all right, we got to write these songs and we got to go in the studio and everything
exactly.
has to be done. And it's probably going to take just about the same amount of time.
Yeah, exactly. We're all about the non-stress, laid back, just, you know, write when it feels right.
Yeah, absolutely, so. Man. Well, hey, dude, thanks for taking the time. It's been fucking really nice talking to you and
yeah,
a lot
man.
Of insight, and I appreciate it.
I'm stoked to be here. I've been ready to be a part of the podcast, so I'm glad we got to make it happen.
Yeah, man, thank you.
Sick. Thanks, bro.
Thanks, man. So there it is with Franz. We were drinking wine. We were drinking beers. We had a shot of whiskey, and I really did have a great time. I want to thank him for his hospitality on his bus and everything. And, you know, say what you want about Attila. Maybe you don't agree with the subject matter of the music. Maybe I don't agree with the subject matter of the music. But they are out there, and they are doing it. And I think part of the show is to get a lot of different perspectives about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. Next week, we'll be back with another episode. Don't miss it. Make sure you're subscribed. And if you do like this show, please go on iTunes and write a review, preferably 5 stars. And if you're coming out to California or Texas Warped Tour or wherever else, Warped Tour hasn't happened yet, please come by and say hello. I would love to meet y'all. I will leave you with a tune. I gotta play some Attila. Here is a track that I find pretty funny, to be honest. It's called Public Apology. Here it is. I'm Lead Singer Syndrome.
I want every single one of you to know that I am truly sorry from the bottom of my heart. I am so sorry. Sorry that you're a little bitch.
Understand what I'm saying to my face, and you can catch these hands. Fuck your shit. I-